Islamic Republic of Iran's navy circumnavigated the globe, returning home to Iranian waters after 8 months, traveling more than 65,000 kilometers in oceans and high seas around the world. This remarkable feat was accomplished in almost 8 months, or to be exact, 232 days, and is a source of national pride for the Islamic Republic. On Sunday, 6th of August, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with commanders, personnel, crew members and families of the 86th Flotilla of the Islamic Republic of Iran's Navy. In this program, we discuss the leader's remarks and points of view expressed at this meeting. Please stay with us. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei congratulated the Iranian Navy for this remarkable achievement, telling the Navy personnel, "Welcome back home, all of you." The average age of the Navy personnel who circumnavigated the globe was just 30 years. And the mean years spent in service at the Navy was 15 years. The 86th Flotilla of the Islamic Republic of Iran Navy shattered all the sailing and navigational records and was a great achievement. The motto of the crew was, rather appropriately, "We can." A beautiful prototype model of the Dinar destroyer placed next to the leader's seat was an indication of the significance of this great achievement and a tribute to the Iranian engineers, scientists, specialists and experts whose efforts had paid off. The prototype model of Dinar destroyer with the words "Dinar, we believe in ourselves" written on it certainly made headlines and attracted a lot of attention. Just like in the past, the carefully chosen verse or ayah of the Holy Quran, ayah 14 of Surah Nahl, was very much appropriate and proper in the circumstances. God Almighty says in ayah 14 of Surah Nahl in the Holy Quran, "And you see the ships plowing their way through the seas, so that you may seek of his bounty, and that you may be grateful." Ayatollah Khamenei addressed the audience by saying, "I would like to welcome each and every one of you, dear brothers and sisters, who have made the Iranian nation proud. God willing, you all will be successful and assisted by God." The purpose of this meeting is to express our gratitude and sincere appreciation to each and every one of you. I would like to thank the 86th Flotilla of the Navy, which carried out a great mission. It successfully circumnavigated the globe, something which has never been accomplished before in the maritime history of our country. I would also like to express my thanks to your family members. The leader added, "I would also like to thank the Honorable Commander of the Iranian Navy and the strategic headquarters that was formed in the army, that is the Zulfaqar Strategic Headquarters, which was continuously in contact with the flotilla. I inquired several times about the mission and saw that they were at all times fully informed about the mission of the flotilla. I would also like to thank the support teams, the technical teams and the like. Their support allowed this great mission to be carried out with success, all working together, and you, the crew and the members of the 86th flotilla, were able to, God willing, carry out this great operation with pride. And you certainly accomplished it. I would like to take the opportunity to remember the martyrs of the Iranian Navy, the martyrs of the frigate Peikan, who, like you, were also young, selfless men. I would also like to remember the martyrs of the Honorable Army of the Islamic Republic. we are all indebted to them and their families. My dear ones, the actions of your predecessors from the time of the important events of the Islamic Revolution, continuing up until this day, has paved the way for your success today. And you should certainly appreciate what your predecessors have done. The army and the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, made many sacrifices at sea, and these sacrifices have borne fruit. You are the blossoming flowers that have grown from the green plant that they brought forth, the sweet fruit from the tree that they planted. Today we are standing at a proud point in history. It's true, the Honourable Navy Commander and the Honourable Commander of the Flotilla made some good comments and some matters were also mentioned. A more detailed description and a more thorough account of the story is needed, and it must be spoken and it must be clear. We are in a position to honour you now. We have arrived at this point because of the efforts and the sacrifices of you and your predecessors. In further remarks, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei added, "The 86th Flotilla's great accomplishment is an honour that has been carried out for the first time in our maritime history. If we put aside the humiliating years of the Pahlavi and Qajar eras, we can say that what you have done today is far more than what has been accomplished in the past. Your flotilla brought about this great honour. A group of 350 people with an experienced, skillful commander was able to travel 65,000 kilometres circumnavigating the globe. You were at sea for almost 8 months, or 232 days to be exact. These are great achievements. In the world's most renowned naval forces, there are few people who have accomplished this and are able to accomplish this. But you have. You sailed across three oceans and returned proudly to your homeland. What you accomplished was very meaningful." In further remarks, the leader said, "This great achievement shows that there is great determination, willpower and self-confidence in our military forces. These are very important matters. Three important factors being determined, making an effort by having willpower and having self-confidence. In other words, we have the mindset that we can. That's one side of the story. There is also the matter of military knowledge and the ability to design. An important component of these operations is their design. It is very important that an organization is able to design something like this through military knowledge. And yet, another dimension includes courage, perseverance, and the ability to endure hardship. We speak easily about spending 8 months at sea. However, those who have spent just 2 or 3 days at sea understand what 8 months means. Enduring these hardships is very important. Each one of these truths deserves attention. That is, one very important thing is that, for example, a military group was able to acquire the capability to design an operation of this kind. Another important thing is believing in yourself and having the confidence. Effective management that is accompanied by skill is another factor. Capable, efficient, skilled management is also very important. This is the front line of the operation. Behind the scene, the formation of strategic headquarters that I mentioned and the continuous communication between the headquarters and the flotilla was also of extreme importance." Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei went on to talk about anxieties and concerns of the family members of the Navy personnel. He said, "These feelings of concern are certainly very significant. Your loved ones were at sea for 8 months. You were naturally worried. You missed them. Parents, have been patient in one way and spouses have been patient in other way. They endured this and they felt proud. When I saw the television footage of the families of the sailors when the flotilla returned to home waters, I could sense the feeling of pride in the parents and the wives and spouses. This feeling of pride is very important. It motivates both you and others to accomplish this great task. If the families had nagged and complained, if they had expressed discontent and displeasure, those who had gone would have felt regret. But thank God your families passed this test well. They were very patient, and they felt proud, and they showed this pride. Elsewhere in his remarks, the leader of the Islamic Revolution said, "What you did improved the confidence of our military forces. It elevated the level of our military capabilities. It strengthened the belief that we can in people's minds. And such a mindset is a blessing in itself and is a basis for progress." The enemy also backs away when it sees this. This is how it naturally is. The next point I'd like to make is that your endeavour provided valuable experience in the field of seafaring for the Navy and for our military forces. In other words, new experiences have been gained. You crossed the Pacific Ocean, and this has never been accomplished before in our maritime history. You passed through the challenging straits and waterways, as mentioned in the report. Passing through some of these straits was a difficult task, a technical task that required skill. But you managed to accomplish it. You were able to pass through these straits and difficult waterways without any unfavourable events taking place. In further remarks, the leader said, "Encountering complications on the sea in remote areas, when you were thousands of kilometres away from home, you encountered various issues that you faced and dealt with. Another experience was your self-sufficiency in fuel, electricity, and facilities such as healthcare. That is, during this adventurous voyage, you became self-sufficient in obtaining fuel, electricity and energy, and healthcare in terms of both hygiene and treatment. You were able to perform surgical operations. These is also very valuable experiences. You were able to gain experience in communicating with your headquarters. This communication is itself was very valuable. In further remarks, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, "Your accomplishment has improved Iran's international image. What I want to say is that political value of your work was no less than its military value. The fact that you were able to carry out such a large task at sea, you demonstrated Iran possesses this amount of power and this number of young people, this scientific capability and this vast amount of skill, which allowed it to accomplish such a great task. It certainly increased the international status of our country." The leader added, "The next point is that there are several lessons to be learnt from your seafaring. It has significant lessons. The first lesson is that it teaches us about God. The sea is one of the clear signs of God's existence. In the supplication of Joshan-e Kabir, it is written, 'O he who possesses wonders in the sea,' the sea is the centre of wonders of creation. The majesty of the sea, the infiniteness of the oceans, the beauty of the various sights at sea, and the sea's fury in some places, the grace of the sea, and the amazing sea creatures, these are all divine signs. They're all signs of God. The sea is actually an exhibition of God's signs. So the first lesson of this seafaring mission is that it teaches us about God. The second lesson is a lesson about the Islamic Revolution. This seafaring shed light on the value and importance of Iran's Islamic Revolution for us and for you and for everyone who becomes aware of your story. It was the revolution that gave us this knowledge, the capability and the self-confidence to carry out such a great task. The revolution gave us the determination and the courage to carry out such a great mission. In concluding remarks, the leader wished everyone and all members of crew, commanders and personnel of the Iranian Navy success for the future.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, if we don't eat healthy, we'll ruin our Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It is such an honor to be here at your service, dear listeners. In today's episode, we are talking about how eating healthy will create our Islamic lifestyle, and on the other hand, how eating unhealthy is going to ruin our Islamic lifestyle. Now, the body and the soul, the ruh, has a very intimate connection. Now, the body is this physical makeup that we have. And then, of course, the ruh is this transcendental, metaphysical, you know, aspect of our total comprehensive existence as a human being. As we had said in some previous programs, a human being is made up of various interconnected and related parts, if you will, even though they're not necessarily separate from one another. It is this whole that is made up of these different aspects, if you will. So one is the physical body, one is the carnal self, the nafs, and of course one is the ruh, the soul or the spirit. And of course, you know, as many of you know, it is the ruh and the soul and the spirit which actually gives life, and it is the soul that continues to live, and it is really the soul that is living. It is just this physical body that was created for this physical realm. Now, if we start to eat healthy, then our body will be healthy, and that will have a positive impact on our spiritual self, because if the vessel is healthy, then whatever is, you know, within the vessel, if you will, is also going to remain healthy. But if the vessel is broken or cracked or dirty or has a hole in it, or, you know, there's some other problem with it, then whatever is contained within the vessel, again, if you will, for lack of better terminology, then that too will be harmed in our Islamic lifestyle. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about how eating unhealthy is going to ruin our Islamic lifestyle. So kind of rounding off our discussion, Islamic lifestyle that we are trying to live, it includes these different aspects, right? It's not just this spirituality that we're merely focusing on when we live an Islamic lifestyle. A lifestyle means all the different aspects of our life, right? It means the spiritual aspect. It means the physical aspect. It means the aspects of the nafs. It means the, you know, different needs that a human being has, whether they are spiritual or financial or physical or whatever you want to, you know, list. Islamic lifestyle covers all of these things. Now, if we start to eat unhealthy, and we're not even talking about things that are haram, right? which I guess we're going to have to talk about in another program. But if we start to eat things that are unhealthy, well, a lot of diseases come about. And it's interesting that the Ahlul Bayt and the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam have spoken about this. They have said that the key to disease is the stomach, meaning what we eat is either going to keep us healthy or it's going to make us sick and it's going to bring about diseases. Now, if we eat unhealthy, then we're going to start to get diseases. After we get diseases, we're going to become weak, you know, and we become weak, then of course we won't be able to live an Islamic lifestyle. We have to be healthy to live a Islamic lifestyle. Now, that doesn't mean that if somebody is sick, they can't live a Islamic lifestyle. But what it does mean is that when somebody is sick and diseased, it makes it much more difficult to live a Islamic lifestyle. Why bring about such difficulty in our life? Is our life not difficult as it is? So, if we start to eat unhealthy, this will ruin our Islamic lifestyle. But with the grace of Allah, if we start to eat healthy, inshallah, we will be able to live a pure Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Anti-French sentiment runs high in Niger as thousands of people have rallied near a French military base on the outskirts of the capital, Niamey, to call for the withdrawal of the country's forces. Protesters shouted "down with France" and "down with ECOWAS" as they surrounded the base. The demonstrators argue that the West African regional bloc is not independent and is being manipulated by France. ECOWAS has given the green light for a military intervention in Niger after it approved the deployment of a standby force as part of its effort to remove Niger military rulers following last month's coup and reinstate deposed pro-Western leader Mohamed Bazoum. The Ivory Coast president says heads of state of the 15-nation bloc have agreed that the operation should start as soon as possible. The president said his country will provide a maximum of 1,100 troops alongside soldiers from Nigeria and Benin. He said other member countries will join them later. France has thrown its full backing to all the conclusions of the West African leaders who met in Nigerian capital Abuja to make the necessary arrangements. The United States has also voiced support for efforts of ECOWAS and Niger.
As significantly, ECOWAS, the organization that brings together West African countries, is playing a lead role in making clear the imperative of the return to constitutional order, and we very much support ECOWAS's leadership and work on this.
The support for ECOWAS efforts come as a deadline set by the regional bloc for Bazoum to be reinstated on August 6th was ignored by Nigerian junta. The junta has moved one step further and announced a new government there. The developments in Niger come nearly 3 weeks after soldiers belonging to the country's presidential guard blockaded access to President Bazoum's residence in Niamey and arrested him. Shortly after the storming of the president's residence, the army led by General Abdurrahman Tiani took control of the country's political leadership there. The idea of a military intervention in Niger comes as many people across the West African nation are opposed to foreign meddling in their internal political affairs.
Today they're in front of our army. It's no longer that they're in front of us. That's to say, if they're thinking of attacking the military, they will first have to attack us, the people of Niger.
But unlike Nigerians, Western countries, namely France and the United States, are pushing for a military intervention there. After all, there are certain facts that lie within their interest, which a change in Nigerian political leadership can hamper all those benefits. In the case of France, the country has domination over Niger's economy. That's why Paris has been seeking a military solution to the crisis in Niger since the very first day of the outbreak of the coup there. One significant factor is Niger's vast uranium reserves. The country supplies around 5% of the world's uranium and is a leading supplier of that chemical element to the European Union. The French government is almost entirely dependent on Niger, as some 25% of Niger's uranium production goes to France. Using that uranium to produce electricity, Paris has become a large exporter of power that goes to countries like Germany and other European nations. The electricity export of that amount makes French huge profits, which make it hard for Paris to admit new political changes in Niger. In the case of the United States, Washington is seeing a growing tendency toward Russia among people in West African nations, including Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali, and that is why, seeing its political interests in tatters, it is pushing for a military intervention in Niger to reinstate pro-West former President Bazoum. With ECOWAS being under the direct influence of Western powers, an actual military intervention in Niger is not unthinkable, despite repeated warnings from Russia that any such move would destabilize the whole region. But apart from that, what matters most of all is that Niger belongs to Nigerians, and they are the ones who should decide their own fate. Given all the anti-Western hatred among the people of Niger and other West African nations, it seems that it is for the Western countries to stop meddling in the affairs of those nations and let people choose their own political path. The United Kingdom is hit with yet another strike action as junior doctors have launched a new walkout amid continued disputes with the government over pay and working conditions. The four-day strike began on Friday and continues until Tuesday. It includes actions by doctors just days into the medical practice. Doctors say their walkout has reached its tipping point due to the government's failure to deliver on its promises. The junior doctors demand a 35% rise, but the government says that is unrealistic and not negotiable. It is proposing a fourth of what junior doctors are asking for. The action is set to impact tens of millions of people receiving services from the National Health Service or NHS. The walkout could push only the number of appointments cancelled due to the NHS strikes past 1 million.
Pay us or lose us!
NHS officials have warned of massive disruptions as a result of the strike action taken by the junior doctors.
This latest round of junior doctors' strikes will again significantly disrupt services for patients. The additional changes this time is that organizations are unable to use agency workers to cover staff out on a strike. It is also a period of time where NHS staff often take annual leave, so there are already gaps in the workplace.
The comments by Dr. Powers comes as the number of people on waiting lists for treatment has surged to a record 7.6 million. In the past months, UK nurses, ambulance staff, and other medical workers have all joined the industrial action across the NHS, mounting more pressure on the government to address the economic woes and financial stress on the public health service workers. The four-day stoppage by junior doctors, to come as the British Medical Association, or BMA, which represents strikers, says the take-home pay of junior doctors has plunged by 26% in the last 15 years. BMA says it will continue to campaign for better pays for its members after branding the public sector pay rise announced by the government in July as insufficient. UK Health Minister Steve Barclay has remained defiant to the junior doctors' request for increased pay. Barclay insists that the pay increase is sufficient and has urged the BMA to end its strikes immediately. Barclay says the pay rise of 6% announced by the government is final. This comes as Britain has been hit hard by similar such action for the past year, with NHS staff being among the main government employees calling for higher wages and better working conditions. The most recent one was a strike staged by senior doctors on July 20 and 21. The British Medical Association said senior doctors will stage another two-day walkout on August 24th and 25th, with the industrial action expected to put the country's National Health Service under more strain.
We are, as senior doctors, really concerned about the state of the NHS, and the only way we could technically make our voices heard was to strike around something that was pay and conditions. So we've had to make ourselves come to the forefront and raise our voices about the concern we have of the NHS.
The back-to-back walkouts have already taken their toll on the country's healthcare system, prompting fears for patients' safety. Not only that, the unprecedented cost of living crisis in the UK has already impacted the Brits hard. Just to mention a few examples, an umbrella group has warned that London's housing crisis is becoming unmanageable, as 1 in 50 Londoners are now living in temporary accommodation. The group has urged the government to help low-income families. In the case of food prices, the cost of some basic items such as cheese, butter and bread has soared to more than 30% in the last 2 years, forcing poorer households to make desperate choices between keeping up with their bill payment or putting food on the table. But those are just tip of the iceberg, as the government of Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is dealing with a huge economic paralysis. From raising of interest rates to curb inflation and its subsequent impact on the UK households, to a large portion of the British population being at a breaking point in dealing with their economic situation, it is not clear what lies ahead in the future for the Brits. Maybe a change in government economic policies can act as a short-term remedy to bring an end to the crisis in the UK.
The Iranian Foreign Ministry has announced the start of a process to unfreeze Iran's assets blocked in South Korea due to American sanctions.
The process for releasing several billion dollars of the Islamic Republic of Iran's assets, which had been illegally frozen in South Korea by the United States for several years, has started. Iran has received necessary guarantees that the U.S. will abide by its commitments in this regard.
The ministry said the decision on how to utilize these unfrozen resources lies with the Islamic Republic of Iran, adding that the assets will be used to meet the country's needs. That followed claims that Iran's access to these assets will be limited. Meanwhile, under the deal, a number of Iranians, whom the foreign ministry statement said are held in the U.S. under the false accusations of circumventing sanctions, will be released. The ministry said several American prisoners in Iran, whose freedom was sought by Washington, are still in Tehran. Iran's mission at the United Nations put the number of those prisoners at 5, that they have been released to house arrest in preparation for a prisoner swap between the two countries. And Iran's Vice President for Political Affairs, Mohammad Jamshidi, said the American prisoners will leave the country after Iranian assets are fully transferred to Tehran. It came after reports by U.S. media outlets, including the New York Times and the CNN, quoted sources as saying that Washington will allow the transfer of nearly $6 billion of Iran's assets in South Korea to an account in the Central Bank of Qatar. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has welcomed the prisoner swap, but said the U.S. will keep up sanctions against Iran.
In any event, in any respect, Iran will not be receiving any sanctions relief. And in any instance where we would engage in such efforts to bring Americans home from Iran, Iran's own funds would be used and transferred to restricted accounts such that the monies can only be used for humanitarian purposes, which, as you know, is permitted under our sanctions. There's an exemption for humanitarian that's there from the start.
The Islamic Republic has in the past rejected U.S. claims of sanctions exemptions for humanitarian purposes. Iran says the sanctions are inhumane and illegal and has directly affected its people's life. Former U.S. President Donald Trump withdrew his country from the 2015 Iran deal in 2018, restoring sanctions on the Islamic Republic. That was part of what Trump called a maximum pressure campaign, which has continued under his successor Joe Biden. Part of the campaign has resulted in business restrictions. But Iranian officials say the so-called pressure campaign has failed as Iran's oil exports has come closer to the figures prior to the reimposition of the sanctions. Statistical data also shows Iran's non-oil exports to the neighboring and friendly states have grown drastically in the past few years. Tehran has time and again blasted the U.S. for what it sees as addiction to sanctions. Based on a report in May 2022, Iran has between $100 and $120 billion trapped in foreign accounts because of the U.S. sanctions. The latest agreement between Tehran and Washington to release several billions of Iran's frozen assets is hailed as another example of an active and dignified diplomacy. Policies that the administration of Iran's president, Ebrahim Raisi, says are on its agenda to protect the rights of the Iranian people in any situation. And the latest deal is significant because it has preserved Iran's dignity as Tehran would not take the first step unless the U.S. shows its commitments under the deal. Also, it is the Islamic Republic that decides for which purposes it uses the unblocked funds, with the foreign ministry saying they would be used to meet the country's needs. The release of Iranian funds in South Korea comes after several billions of dollars of other Iranian assets frozen in Iraq were unblocked in July this year. Iran has time and again said it will continue to safeguard its rights and will never bow to outside pressure.
The U.S. publication has obtained a classified document suggesting Washington pushed for the removal of former Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan from office. The document has been published by The Intercept. According to the secret cable known internally as a cipher, a meeting took place on March 7, 2022, between the Pakistani ambassador to the U.S., Asad Majid Khan, and two State Department officials. During the meeting, U.S. officials, including the Assistant Secretary of State for the Bureau of South and Central Asian Affairs, Donald Liu, encouraged the Pakistani government to remove Imran Khan over his neutrality over the war in Ukraine. The day before the meeting, Khan addressed a rally and responded directly to European calls that Pakistan rally behind Ukraine. During that rally, Khan said Pakistanis were not slaves to the Europeans and Americans. He said, "We are friends of Russia, and we are also friends of the U.S. We are friends of China and Europe. We are not part of any alliance." 1 month after the meeting with U.S. officials, a no-confidence vote was held in Parliament leading to Khan's removal from power. The vote is believed to have been organized with the backing of Pakistan's powerful military. The cable reveals both the carrots and the sticks that the State Department deployed in its push against Khan, U.S. officials promising warmer relations if Khan was removed. They also threatened Pakistan with isolation if Khan was not removed from power. The diplomatic meeting came 2 weeks after the war began between Russia and Ukraine. Before his ouster, Khan had already accused the, quote, foreign power of funding a conspiracy to topple his democratically elected government.
So I get this message. Donald Liu is telling the ambassador that unless I, Imran Khan, is removed as the prime minister in the no-confidence motion, there'll be consequences for Pakistan. It was a conspiracy. It was the army chief. It was the guy who's the prime minister right now. And the U.S. came into it as thinking as I'm someone anti-American. Some reason, if you don't agree with the U.S. foreign policy, you're turned anti-American. First, worry about your own people rather than getting involved in conflicts.
The unnamed foreign power was interpreted as a clear reference to the U.S. Following Khan's ouster from power, Pakistan plunged into a crisis. He was elected in July 2018, promising to fight corruption and to fix the economy. But those pledges went unmet, and the world's second-largest Muslim country was gripped by a financial crisis. After Khan's removal, his supporters took to the streets across Pakistan to show their support for the removed prime minister. Since his removal from power, about 200 court cases have been lodged against Khan by the military-backed government.
All my time is spent from going from one court to another courtroom. I have made, in 2 months, over 350 court appearances. And my legal team is busy fending off one case after the other. But the thing is, nothing sticks, because these are frivolous, bogus cases. And what now they are planning to do is to have military courts. And this is right now in the Supreme Court, whether the courts will allow military courts or not. And the objective of the military court is that there I certainly will be sentenced.
The former prime minister has maintained that the cases against him are politically motivated to keep him out of power. He says the country's powerful military is behind these cases. Khan has been barred from holding public office for 5 years by the country's electoral authorities. The decision was announced by the Election Commission of Pakistan days after Khan was sentenced to 3 years in prison for corruption. Under Pakistani laws, a convicted person cannot run for public office for a period set out by the Election Commission of Pakistan.
The recent premature decision by the Election Commission of Pakistan is just another method for this unmandated government to try to eliminate Imran Khan from the political landscape of Pakistan. We must remember that Imran Khan was, is, and always will remain the chairman of Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf, the largest national-level party in the country. Imran Khan's case against him from a session court will be reversed.
Khan is not the first Pakistani prime minister to be convicted of alleged corruption. It is believed the political system in Pakistan is widely mired in corruption, and none of the politicians and political parties have shown any desire to fix the system. On Thursday, Pakistan's parliament was dissolved on the recommendation of Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif, making way for a general election amid political and economic crises. But the vote could be delayed several months, with the Election Commission set to start redrawing hundreds of constituencies based on a fresh consensus. Analysts have said any delay in the election could fuel public anger and add to uncertainty in the cash-strapped country.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآن جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان ودعوتك ربي بقرآن.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم السلام عليكم Brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, welcome to Let's Recite the Quranic Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions and practical tajweed rules, step by step, verse by verse. Inshallah, we're here with you. And I really welcome you all. Thanks for joining IRIB English Radio. Fawad Haider Salam, Hassan, Hussein, and Ali Nasir, welcome, brothers. Is everyone fine?
Alhamdulillah.
So, inshallah, let's go and start our class. Inshallah, today we'll talk about Ayah 94 and Ayah 95 of Surah Ali Imran, these two verses on page 62, inshallah. So, everybody, let's once listen to the recitation.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. فَمَنِ افْتَرَى عَلَى اللَّهِ الْكَذِبَ مِنْ بَعْدِ ذَلِكَ فَأُولَئِكَ هُمُ الظَّالِمُونَ قُلْ صَدَقَ اللَّهُ فَاتَّبِعُوا مِلَّةَ إِبْرَاهِيمَ حَنِيفًا وَمَا كَانَ مِنَ الْمُشْرِكِينَ
That was great, and now we will explain a bit, okay, this about these two verses, and then inshallah move on to the tajweed rules, the same as our previous sessions, inshallah. A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytanir rajim. Allah Almighty says in Ayah 94, ثَمَنِ افْتَرَى عَلَى اللَّهِ الْكَذِبَ مِنْ بَعْدِ ذَلِكَ فَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الظَّالِمُونَ In Ayah 95, قُلْ صَدَقَ اللَّهِ فَاتَّبِعُوا مِلَّةَ إِبْرَاهِيمَ حَنِيفًا وَمَا كَانَ مِنَ الْمُشْرِكِينَ Right?
Yes.
In Ayah 94, Allah Almighty says, فَمَنِ افْتَرَى So whoever fabricates a lie against Allah Almighty after that, or attributes lie to Allah Almighty, فَمَنِ افْتَرَى عَلَى اللَّهِ الْكَذِبِ Lie, okay? فَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الظَّالِمُونَ It is they who are the wrongdoers. Then in Ayah 95, Allah says, قُلْ O Prophet, say, صَدَقَ اللَّهِ Allah has spoken the truth. Okay? Allah has spoken the truth. فَاتَّبِعُوا مِلَّةَ إِبْرَاهِيمَ حَنِيفًا So follow the creed The nation of Abraham alayhi salam, the religion of Abraham alayhi salam, who was a hanif. وَمَا كَانَ مِنَ الْمُشْرِكِينَ And he was not one of the polytheists. He was a monotheist. So guys, in the previous ayah, in Ayah 93, Allah Almighty talked about the important argument of the Jewish and the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Yes, those who were saying that, well, this food is haram and Muslims do so and they do not care about haram things. Well, actually, when Allah Almighty sends a rule, okay? The laws. Sends the laws, okay? So, who sends the laws? Allah Almighty. Now, guys, I'm saying this, okay? If anybody, okay? If anybody, I'm just saying an inference, okay, that I've understood. I want to say about this ayah that when Allah Almighty sends the rules, okay, the laws, When Allah Almighty completes His hujjah, okay, His proofs, okay, Allah Almighty sends all His proofs, His reasons to reasoning people, okay, to wise people, okay. After that, there is no other excuse. When Allah tells you everything, goodnesses and badnesses of everything, advantages and disadvantages of everything, Allah Almighty proves it, and there will be no excuse for you. In the Day of Judgment, you will not have any excuse to say, God, you didn't send me the rule. Okay? There is no excuse. Then you cannot say, God, you didn't. God, there was a blah, 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 these things. You can't attribute any lies, okay? You can't do anything. So if you do not follow the rules after this, if you have received the rules, okay? If you do not follow, then you will be also among the wrongdoers.
قلبي دوما يغمرني من فيض ضياء آيات
IRIB English Radio, in cooperation with Xavier International Schools, presents Let's recite the Quran.
So, Guys, our time for explanation is up. We must move to the Tajweed rules. I want you, inshallah, to learn more about these verses, but you can't do so if you do not refer to the Tafasir books. So please refer to the Tafasir books, inshallah, to learn more. Okay? Fawad, Hassan, Hussein, and Ali Nasir? That's right.
Yes.
Let's go on to the important Tajweed rules. فَمَنْ افْتَرَى عَلَى اللَّهِ الْكَذِبَ من بعد ذلك فأولئك هم الظالمون Very simple. فَمَنْ افْتَرَى If you do not read فَمَنْ, how do you start the word, the next word after it? أَفْتَرَى, أُفْتَرَى, إِفْتَرَى
إِفْتَرَى
إِفْتَرَى Why?
Because of the third letter.
Ah, third letter. What is it? Ah, the harakat on the third letter. The vowel on the third letter. So what is the vowel on the third letter?
Fatha.
Fatha. Whenever you have a fatha or a kasra, okay, the hamzatul wasl will be assigned kasra. With kasra. But when the third letter has a dhamma, vowel dhamma, will it will be assigned with?
Dhamma.
But here you join them together. So if when you join them, you skip hamzatul wasl. Famanif. The harakat will be. Look, noon is also sakin. Hamzatul wasl is also sakin, right? Faman noon is sakin. So if iltaqata sakinatain hurrik, well, just put a kasra down there, okay, on the noon, beneath the noon, okay, and read it. Fama
nif
niftara. Ra has a heavy sound. Also has an alif mad. Alallahi, Allah. There is a fatha sound before the word Allah. Ala, ala. Alif mad will be skipped because there is hamzatul wasl after it, right? Ala Allahi, no. Ala Allahi. Fast and happily, not furiously, okay? Ala Allahi. Ala Allahi. Heavily pronounce the letter lam in the word Allah. Al kadhiba, also hamzatul wasl will be skipped. Ala Allahi al kadhiba. Min ba'di dhalik. Who could say this? Min ba'di. What is the rule here?
Iqlab.
Iqlab. MashaAllah. You hide the sound of noon and produce a hidden
meme sound.
Do you hide the sound of noon?
No, it's no. Like half meme sound.
No, no. What change. About the noon? Ah, change.
Change, noon
change the
meme.
Noon to a hidden meme sound. Min ba'di dhalik. But make sure there is a nasal sound also. Fa'ulaika. This is easy. We have said a lot. Okay, we have told this a lot. It's wajib. Wajib mat. Wajib mutasil, right?
Yeah.
You must stretch. Humu al-zalimun. Humu. Hum al-zalimun. Again.
You skip
two sakin letters.
Hamzatul wasl.
Yeah. Two sakin letters we have here, but we do not put a kasra on mim. Underneath the mim, okay? We put a dhamma. So humu. It might be because of the previous letter, ha, which has an u. Humid zalimun, no. Humud zalimun. Zalimun, a heavy letter. Qul, next ayah. Qul, sadaqallahu. Qul, sadaqallahu. Okay? Sadaqallahu. Again, the same as alallahi. The letter lam in the word Allah will be pronounced heavily. So, qila, is that qila? Yeah. It tells you, it's better to...
Stop.
But you could continue if you want. فَاتَّبِعُوا فَاتَّبِعُوا It is yes?
Yeah.
فَاتَّبِعُوا Actually, it is تَبِعُوا, okay? Hamzatul wasl. Because ta is sakin, you can't read it. That's why you have hamzatul wasl there. That's the reason why we use hamzatul wasl. فَاتَّبِعُوا مِلَّةَ إِبْرَاهِيمَ حَنِيفًا Tanween. After tanween, you got a waw. The next word, wa. Idgham. You merge them and a nasal sound, two counts also. Millata Ibrahim Hanifa. Also Ibrahim. The letter ba. Qalqal. And a bounce. Echo the sound. Ibrahim Hanifa. Wa ma kana min al mushrikeen. That's all. There is no special rule, okay? Let's read once. I'll read. Make sure you practice, inshallah. We've got 1 minute. So, brothers, this is the last minute in this session. Listen carefully, inshallah. We'll practice these two verses of Surah Ali Imran, and we'll move on, inshallah. A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
فمن افترى على الله الكذب من بعد ذلك فأولئك هم الظالمون
فَمَنِ افْتَرَى عَلَى اللَّهِ الْكَذِبَ مِنْ بَعْدِ ذَلِكَ فَأُولَئِكَ هُمُ الظَّالِمُونَ
أحسنتم ما شاء الله قُلْ صَدَقَ اللَّهُ
قُلْ صَدَقَ اللَّهُ
فاتبعوا ملة إبراهيم حنيفا وما كان من المشركين
فاتبعوا ملة إبراهيم حنيفا وما كان من المشركين
Now let's say صدق الله Okay, قل صدق الله صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم
أحسنتم ما شاء الله الله bless you thank you so much brothers and sisters Alhamdulillah we explained a bit about this ayah and then we mentioned the important tajweed rules we practiced the recitation that's all from us for today inshallah we'll be here with you in the coming sessions stay with IRB English Radio Thank you so much for being with us up to this time, brothers here, Fawad, Hassan, Hussein, Ali Nasir, and inshallah we'll be here again with you. See you. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.